Podcast. Chase and I have been chopping it up for years and years and years and years and years. This is our latest session on all the emotional traits that fucking matter. This podcast matters. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you and your family have the best holiday.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Gary Vaynerchuk, welcome to the show, bud.
Thank you for having me, my old friend.
Old? You call me old?
I am, but you look great. You're thanks, old buddy. And gorgeous.
Nice to see your face again on the screen here. It's been a little bit. Yeah. You've had a lot cracking lately. First, congratulations on Christie's. That's a huge deal,
thank you.
Dude.
Thank you.
Gary Vee and Christie's, like, man, I thought I had you on Phillips DePuri. I did an auction a long time ago. And now you're just rolling in off the top turnbuckle at Christie's. congratulations. That's in the NFT world. But before we go to NFTs, you got a new book that's coming out, man. And I don't want to beat around the bush because I think this is your best work yet, and I'm curious if you could tell us a little bit about it and why you wrote it.
First of all, that's like so huge to hear from you because I know you well enough to know what that statement means. And it's funny, I've been quietly and I haven't been publicly, so talk about, you know, why I admire you. I think you have a really good read on this. I do think that the only book that was like this was Crush It.
Yeah,
I felt Crush It, you know, much like many people's first album, right?
Yeah,
you have your whole life to write it. So I had, quote unquote, a lot of things to say and new things to say. And during a time of transition in the world, you know, the economic crisis, social media. So this, I really got into my feelings in a different way and really asked myself, like, what is it that allows the insanity of like, the Christie stuff, when you're 45 and now you can say, okay, I've put more than half my life down in my professional years and boy, this is really going well and I'm happy, right? It's not just like friends that we have that have done well financially, but are not happy, right? We know that.
There's a lot of them. Yeah.
There's a lot more of them than the world believes or knows. And so, you know, I have, for over a decade now, I've been passionate to share and talk. And I feel like, you know, COVID, right? You get to get, you know, you have time to think and I'm at a different pace. And I think I finally kind of put down in a really fun format, which was really the thing I was most scared about. Like, how would I structure these feelings? And I really talk about what I believe, which is emotional intelligence in business is the advantage. That being kind doesn't mean you get walked all over and you're bad at negotiations. You know, that optimism matters, that accountability, pointing a thumb at yourself versus a finger, especially if you're an owner where you hired that person. So what are we doing here? You know, and so, yeah, really, I'm actually, you know, sorry to like throw this in a different direction, but like would love to understand why you think that's the case.
Well, I long have believed, much like, for example, creativity, the things that are soft and very difficult to explain often get written off. But I'll give you what I think is a good analog, which is social media. 15 years ago, naysayers were saying that social media did mean shit, and it was something to write off. But what we know now is that it was virtually the same then as it is now. And yet the thing that was missing was our business culture's ability to measure it.
Correct.
As soon as the technology allowed people to measure it, all the ad dollars came flying out of television into social media because it was the fast, the most personal, the smartest, and everyone knew everything about it. And so it was all of a sudden what used to be just like literally 6 months or 12 months before was just like, oh, it's too fuzzy. It's social media. Became the shit.
Yes.
And what I see now is the same thing. It was very easy to measure a P&L or to measure, someone's performance on these 8 KPIs. And yet we've all seen businesses that have the KPI shit in the bag or leaders that check the boxes. I can manage a P&L like, you know, till the cows come home. But what we can't measure, but we know because we see it in the best leaders and the best creators and the best entrepreneurs in the world, is emotional intelligence. And I think you've written the first book that underscores, I think I wrote that book in creativity, and I think that. I think you wrote it in emotional intelligence.
I appreciate it. I'm really proud of it. Like I really, you know, for everybody listening, I created these scenarios because that's where everything comes from. I'm more of a listener than I'm a talker, which always, you know, makes people laugh or freak out or disagree. But I always remind them, I'm like, you only see the content I put out and post-produce very effectively. Like most of my day is the consumption of information. And a lot of the scenarios are baked in the, at this point, hundreds of thousands, if not even millions of DMs, emails that I've received over the last 15 years of this journey. And, you know, there's just some really complicated stuff out there, right? Like stay-at-home mom or dad who still has a lot of fire in their belly and like, what do you do here? And like just all sorts of fun stuff that I went through. And, you know, I really talk about accountability. Curiosity was a fun one for me to explore. You know, I structured the book out of these 13 ingredients that I think really give somebody a real shot in the business world. And it's a life book in that way too. Mm-hmm. I called it 12 and a half because this one really caught a lot of people off guard. Gary Vee, the character, the public domain speaker and pontificator and content creator, very good at candor. Too good. Gary Vaynerchuk, the CEO and human, very bad at it. That's why I called it 12 and a half. And I called it kind candor. My journey to making kind candor a half from a zero was because I started calling it kind candor instead of candor. Because I saw, back to your point, I saw candor for a long time as an excuse to be mean. I saw candor as something that often created fear. But what I didn't have yet was the maturity to understand the vessel that candor was being delivered in was the vulnerability. You know, my father was rough with his candor delivery. A lot of managers that were in that store were. Many people I came across in business in the 90s and 2000s were. The candor wasn't the problem. The vessel that was delivering the candor wasn't kind, wasn't empathetic. But now that I've got a better sense that of that separation, and then I was very self-reflective. All the things that weren't working for me always pointed back to lack of candor. And I talk about these ingredients. I talk about scenarios where three or four of them. It's really fun to show people that ambition and patience can be played out in the same scenario. People think that's a contradiction, you know? And so I really went there.
You did. You did. And of course, if you haven't clued in yet, we're talking about Gary's new book, 12 and a half, leveraging the emotional ingredients necessary for business success. But I'm going to extend your subhead a little bit. I would say business and personal success.
Yeah, I think that's right.
You know, it's a business book and we have the same publisher, Hollis.
Yeah.
And yet these skills, most of the people who listen to the show are identify as creators, entrepreneurs. But what I have learned is that the same authenticity, transparency, the emotional ingredients that make one successful in business are absolutely critical to life. Think about the relationships that you have. And I'm wondering, did your emotional intelligence develop because of business, or did your business acumen and emotional intelligence develop because of Gary the human?
It's so weird. It's such a fun question. Thank you. My brain immediately goes into, man, it's hard because this was all happening at 6 and 7 and 8 and 9. You know, I talk a lot about this. I'm not sure people believe it. This has been a very big theme amongst my friends and relatives lately, probably because of the Christie's thing. You know, you sit there and you have an event where like five of your drawings sell for $1 million and you know, and you're up there and you're outselling Pollock and Warhol and you're like, what the fuck? And then you go through the feelings of like knowing people are, if I'm what the fuck, then many people are like, this is bullshit. And I get a lot of feedback from people I grew up with that are like, man, I wish they knew that all you used to do was doodle in class and on the chalkboard. And, you know, I've come to realize I'm dramatically more creative than I've thought about. Even the way as an entrepreneur, I've always thought of it as creativity, but I thought of it as strategy. You know, even though in so many ways I now see them the same. And so you know, I think for me, when I talk about being a businessman at 6, 7, and 8, there was a piece of content I put out recently where, you know, I do this thing called Trash Talk where I go garage sailing and I put out YouTube videos to teach people that it's out there. And I give this young girl $20 for her lemonade and I'm walking back to the car and I'm talking about the reason I did that was that happened to me when I was 10. Some guy stopped on a bike, filled up his lemonade and he gave us a $10 bill. And you know, I'm a 45-year-old man. I was 8 years old.
So it was 10 cents back then.
Well, it was $10, which was like $4,000. It was actually the reverse, right? It was $10.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, your lemonade was 10 cents.
My lemonade was actually maybe 25 cents, but we've sold at 10 cents back then. So maybe. And so, you know, in the comments, just the amount of people, it's amazing how cynicism is so prevalent. Like, that never happened. And like, you know, a couple of both Marissa Bird and Robbie Turnick, who both happened to be there, were like, no, that really happened. And it's something we've talked about. And so, you know, it's this really fun journey. I've gone on a tangent. The answer is I'm not sure. I've been doing it so much for so long. I genuinely believe the talent of human intuition was always there. But the refinement of these natural emotional skills, being a leader of my friends at 6, like I was, to, you know, being 14 and being the son of the father who owned the liquor store and interacting with clients and with employees. You know, at 22, I was running the business, like for real. So I just think I've, you know, at 45 years old, I have so much pattern recognition and wisdom of reps from a kid. My mom last night sitting right here was saying how often I spent time with 80-year-olds as a 4-year-old, just would gravitate towards it. And so, you know, it's fun. I think I'm very onto something with this book. I think it's gonna really leave a positive impact, this conversation. And I think I'm gonna build an empire, but I'm gonna do it with honey, not vinegar.
Well, it doesn't. I wouldn't disagree. Seeing where you've set your ambitions in the past and what you've been able to achieve, something that's important, I think, to establish in this conversation. And I know we're one of the earlier podcasts you've done in support of your new book. I want to get firmly on the table that these are skills that are trainable and practicable. And once you have the awareness, the understanding of what it is you're trying to cultivate, that you can actually do this. So if someone sees themselves as not emotionally intelligent or has that, what I would say is a bad habit you articulated earlier around packaging candor in a shit sandwich because it is actually under the guise of like, hey, I'm going to be direct.
Correct.
You know, and then that's a terrible way of delivering, say, feedback. That's where you've wrapped it in kindness. So these concepts are not something that are removed from other skills or the practice, if you will, of creativity, of understanding that you're creating and engaging in it. So for the people who don't see themselves that way, would you give them a message about what you feel is possible using the ingredients of your book with their own emotional intelligence?
I think a lot of people are looking for permission to bring their strengths on the EQ side to the business world. And I think I've been doing that, but not communicating it as much. And that's why this is so aha for me. This is why people I deeply admire who I think consume a lot of content like yourself will say, I think this is the one. It makes a lot of sense to me because it is in the same way Crush It was the one. It was like, I was uncomfortably right in that book, which is like, hey, you're going to be able to make money not by having a job and not by having a startup. And like, the creator economy is ungodly in exactly the way I laid it out. Same here. I don't think it's going to be uncommon for people to believe that empathy and kindness and patience are like the alpha shit, not sharp elbows, not negotiation. Like when I hear things like don't take it personal, it's just business. I'm like, what part of cruelty is acceptable in any scenario? Right? When I think about people not realizing the world's abundant and actually want to tear down other people's, like, you can't imagine how much I want everything to happen for you and everybody that looks like you and I. right? Like, yep. Like the level of cheering I have for everybody who's a personality who might be amassing attention through content. That's why I've always loved your platform. I want everybody on it to, like, I don't think like Tim Ferriss or Kevin Rose or Arlen Hamilton or like Brooke Morin, like I don't think any of their attention that they get for what they do, even though it might be tangentially touching what I do, is taking out of me.
No.
And I want people to, I'm very competitive. Like, this is not about like I again, I don't know how hardcore you read it, skimmed it, got a sense of it, but like, this is not written in the sense of like, oh, let's be fluffy and eighth place trophy. Like tenacity is one of the 12 and a half. There's nothing soft about tenacity, right? Ambition. These are real things, you know, but I think people are confused. I think people are confused. And then we had this whole era, and this is where this book is actually seeded probably 10 years ago, maybe 12, when I realized, oh no, a lot of these kids think it's cool to be mean because Steve Jobs was considered mean.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, man, if I ever get to as big as I think I'm gonna get, because I thought it, and not that I'm Steve Jobs now, but like I have enough attention and enough success and enough pattern recognition and have seen it and witnessed it in enough other places, because it's not a focus group of one, that I feel like maybe this conversation, and I've been doing it quietly in my social, and I think I really want this book to go viral because I want it to change the temperament of leaders.
I'm going to do a little full circle moment here. So I'm sitting about 10 feet from when you were a wine guy and I'd seen your shit on Vidler, and I had one of the first, certainly the first live show on the internet and one of the first podcasts, and invited you. It was right after Crush It. And I believe in parallel to what you're saying, that this book that you've written here, 12 and a half, rivals the timeliness, the vision that Crush It did. We sat about 12 feet away from you. Actually, at one moment you got on my lap, which was awesome.
I remember.
But, and we talked about the same thing, about what the future was going to tell about the moment that we were living in right there. And you or we were, I think, right on that. And I believe that, as I mentioned, that cycle of social media was very valuable, and it became understood that it was valuable when we could measure it. I think the same thing is true with the traits that you talk about here. There's an understanding
amongst the people who are doing it. What trait do you think, it doesn't even have to be one of the 12 and a half, that you think you've most gotten better at? As simple as that. Most you have gotten stronger at in as your career has evolved?
Easy, empathy. Mm. No question. My worldview was built very much on hard charging, you know, there's a way and it's my way. And, you know, as you mentioned,
whoever's being in a leader, the way.
Totally. And you mentioned being a leader. I've been the, you know, the captain of every sports team I've ever played on.
Yeah,
all of those things were true. And ironically, and I will say actually sadly for me, that was culturally reinforced over and over and over.
Of course.
And when I remember started working with my wife, Kate, she came in and was producing these, you know, photo shoots from all over the world. And we have very different styles. We're very complementary. And I was sort of telling her how to get the best price on the helicopter to fly to the thing. And, you know, and my tactics were just like
bull in a china. Yeah.
Oh, or worse. And she is the kindest, sweetest person in the whole world. And I watched her get further, negotiate better, have lasting relationships
me and my dad. My dad, I always say, Dad, you're a better negotiator than me, but I don't fully believe it. And I always like, and he knows that I don't. He may win the battle, but he lost every war. He might have gotten 50 cents more off that bottle, but I watched because I started at 14. We didn't, not only did we not get good deals from those wineries anymore at times, people figured out my dad's game. And I could tell, because I was so in tune, that they were starting at higher price points.
Yeah.
Right? So they made him feel accomplished in his negotiation. But, you know, I think that's right. When I talk about this, and I want everybody to hear this, in a world we live in now, very polarizing, left, right, blue, red, this isn't about, okay, let's like take the teeth out of business. Like, this is very much a business and life book, like for achievement, for success. And there is absolutely, like, it's a game. It's the best way I can put it is, I think of it like football, which I obviously, you know, I love a lot.
Surprise.
When they play football, they beat the living shit out of each other and they go hard. But when the game is over, and this drives me crazy as a fan, because I'm mad that we lost, and I don't want you to buddy-buddy with the other guy. We just lost. But they ask how the wife is. I mean, now I'm very into that world. They talk about things like, hey, I'd love to give a donation to your charity. You'd be blown away by the stuff that's actually being talked on the field. And you know this, but like you did at a younger level, like this is the professional level. And I see business that way. This is win. Let's win. But believe it or not, back like your incredible partner there, you can win with more hearts than daggers.
For sure. And to see it, and in turn, that helped me deconstruct what she was doing and recognize that as soon as you can, you know, experience some of the challenges that someone else is experiencing and at work, and that realize that they have a boss and connect around the fact that it's hard and we're just going to both try and do right by one another, or, you know, or some myriad example.
It was very powerful there. One thing I talk a lot about in this book is optimism. If you decided it's bad, it's already bad.
Yeah.
Cynicism and pessimism is a game changer for people. It is awful. It is a game over before you started.
I have room in my life for a lot of things and in my business for a lot of things. Cynicism is not one of them.
I got
no space for it. So again,
the other thing that I want to just say real quick,
good.
I asked D-Rock the other day, like, hey, so what hit you? Cause we just did the audio book and he was filmed the making of it, then the book. And he's like, it's the perspective part. It's when you talk about like a billion people not having clean water. Like, it's truly like what I realized in this book, and I didn't really put the nail in the coffin, but it's very clear to me what I did in this book. The other thing I did in this book in hindsight was talk about something I never talk about. I'm not even sure I've articulated this yet in content. So here you go. I can't, even as I'm about to try right now, ever fully articulate to people how little I think business matters. There is I love what I do. I love my process. I love the game. I'm all that I appear to be from a passion standpoint about this. But if the concept of business was wiped off the earth tomorrow, I'm incredibly okay with that. Like, to me, it just doesn't mean that much. And people have so much pressure in the workplace, especially entrepreneurs and employees. Yeah. And like, they say like a desperate fighter is a dangerous fighter in a boxing match. And I feel like it's really weird to say this, this balance of massive ambition, massive, with equal content is mind-boggling. And a lot of what I undertone in this book is like, you can eliminate a lot of anxiety if you realize what actually matters.
Well, it's been enjoyable watching that evolve from days where you and I were putting videos on Viddler. Remember, there was no YouTube?
Of course. And I liked it because you could like pick which dot, you could see which wine I drank. I mean, even when there was YouTube, I wanted to be on Viddler because I thought the tagging mattered so much for my content.
Yeah, and it turns out that that's now Google searching inside of video so that you can do exactly that. What is it? It's 15 years later now. The fact that we've been doing this for 15 years together is That's a little bit of a head scratcher and fun for me.
The fact that you look younger 15 years later is the real head scratcher. Let's all give this man a lot of love. Please leave that comment on social of how right I am about that.
Well, we need to get together again soon. Before I let you go, man, I've got a couple of things about, and I'm going to read a text that you sent me a short while ago. Chase, my man, where are you with NFTs? And we mentioned your auction at Christie's, which is exceptional in many ways, but I don't think it's separate from this book. And here's I'm going to make the connection, and then I want you to talk about NFTs. The connection between the book is awareness, empathy, connection, these soft skills historically referred to as soft, but actually are the core. There's an awareness of who you are, where the opportunities are, and you are embracing NFTs early and big because they are going to be so huge. Let's give the shortest crash course that you feel like you can on the GV lens on NFT ASAP, okay?
Digital ownership is here, and that's it. Like, it's an incredibly simple statement, but it's incredibly difficult for everybody because we've just gone through 20 years of non-digital ownership. All of us listening grew up with 20 plus years of the internet, more, where you didn't own it. As a matter of fact, even the people that own the IP didn't own it. So it was the extreme other way. We were all using creative freedom with all this stuff. We were almost taught that. Like, people started realizing the attention was worth more than the actual monetizing of the expression. It's what hurt Major League Baseball. They tried to monetize everything, so you couldn't find any of their content on social except their channels, and the sport decreased in popularity. We all bought into that, and there's an incredible level of truth to that. We now have something called blockchains. Blockchains can understand who owns certain things, and we will now start owning certain things, no different than owning a sheep in Farmville or a outfit in, you know, Fortnite. And the things we will buy will follow the things like Mercedes, Cartier. We will express ourselves through our ownership. I would never flash $500,000 in a bank account. I will tomorrow flash my proud ownership of a CryptoPunk. That's how humans work. That's how why we buy art. That's why we do things. Even if we're not talking about extreme wealth or even middle-class wealth, let's just talk about why somebody wants a pair of Air Jordans at the end of the day, right? It's expression. And the same way you care about a blue check mark, whether you do or not, we can all agree many do. The same way you care about following count, whether you do or not, I think we can all agree billions do. Well, that's what's about to happen with what's in your wallet. And I believe your public wallet will become a greater insight to who you are than even the pictures you post on social, because they're less manipulatable. And so I think this digital ownership and expression, and then the underlying technology of NFTs, where you can transfer leases and homes, and it's profound. It is profound. It is Internet 1, Internet 2. This is why it's called Internet 3. NFTs are the biggest thing that's happened since Social 05 or Internet 95. And everybody listening, must, please, it's not going to take any skin out of my back, but please, if you're listening to this, knowing this audience, please spend 20 hours of real homework and don't say no or whatever or nah, say maybe and then build.
All right, very, very real world scenario. UGV, give me advice right now on NFTs.
You need to spend 20 hours so that you can put out a project and sell some original photography with access to you underneath it, just to learn.
For a man of many words, that was pretty good.
Tight.
You're tight in your program, aren't you?
It'll be so easy for you because you care about community. You'll understand that, oh, okay, I'm going to take these 25 photos I've never shown anybody in the world. I'm going to NFT them. I will, whoever buys it, I'll give them the physical print, and I will give all 25 of them an evening, a full day with me, a working session and a dinner. And I have a funny feeling 25 people will buy that NFT. And by the way, I would be one of those people. Why? I believe in your career. I believe in your future. And I would say to myself, oh, I might be able to sell that NFT for a profit in 12 years as he continues to ascend. It's not super complicated.
All right. What's the insight? We've talked about emotional intelligence, your new book, 12 and a half NFTs. I'm trying to use those as just very cornerstone examples of the work that you're doing now. What is the thing that is not on the radar now that has that you are equally
for me, it will be long form storytelling. There is no scenario of me leaving this world without me putting out meaningful television and film.
Mm.
I just have too many stories that I want to tell.
Mm. What's the first one going to be?
There's a basketball player by the name of Connie Hawkins who got banned from the NBA. And I think it's an incredibly important story because I think it's unjust. And so that's on my mind. And then, you know, I'll probably get forced into animation. VFriends is insane what I'm actually doing.
Yeah.
And so, you know, probably my first at bat will be where I am right now in VFriends land, an animated film or movie around Patient Panda and Empathy Elephant, who I do think are my Woody and Buzz Lightyear. You know, those are the two kind of like alphas of the Optimus Prime and, you know, kind of the alphas in my universe. So we'll see. But I have most of what I'm going to do is going to sit under the foundation of these emotional traits, right? Like humanity.
Man. I've always enjoyed our conversations. I want to keep this one tight. Congratulations on the new book. The Christie's thing is huge. And if you haven't been following along, you've been living under a rock, look that one up because it's a good one. Gary cracked a milli through a Christie's auction with a hand. I mean, you can't even keep a straight face. It's
just surreal. And by the way, on the record, let nobody be confused. The laughing is like nervous excitement, but
totally.
But there will be no chance that that will not be a good investment for the people that bought it. I am going to build Disney. I'm going to. Now, I might, you know, maybe I pass too soon, maybe whatever, but I do believe over the next 30 years that I will make these characters incredibly culturally relevant. And, you know, I'm obsessed with over-delivering for everybody who owns a VFriend NFT or the five people that now own the original art.
Well, do not doubt that for a half second. I don't think I've doubted you. I do enjoy every once in a while seeing our sometimes mutual friends, aka like Chris Sacca, for example, talking a little shit here and there. And then we creators and entrepreneurs have a way of being right. We've been wrong plenty of times, but it's been fun to watch. You got an outstanding track record.
The best part about Sacca, the best part about the way I like to roll too, is we all love to have hot takes. I think his is a little bit tongue-in-cheek. He's actually, I think, just being incredibly nice to me, giving some love to this project. But, you know, it's really, really cool to watch a lot of us evolve over the last 15 years. And I'm, like, excited for the next 15. I can't wait to see which solid acquaintance or friend or very good friend becomes governors and presidents. And, like you know, our generation, our, call it 38 to 52 crew is now going into that next year. And I just think it's going to be a lot of fun to see how it all breaks out.
It is. If life is seasons, I'm very much looking forward to the next season. A lot of folks that are in our friend circles and people that those listening and watching now would know on the internet who are doing exciting things. It makes it very fun to be a part of. This show included. Appreciate your time. Always, cheers, my man. Brother. We got lots to connect on offline. Love you as well, yes, man. Be well. This book's going to crush.
Thank you.
Go get them.
Thank you.
See you, my bae. See you, bye.